Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. It's the international break. Nobody likes the international break. Well, I don't think anybody likes the international break over here anyway. I can't speak on behalf of everybody else. But there is still a podcast. There's plenty to talk about. And so I'm welcoming to the show this week, Kimmy from the Coys R Us, or Coys R US. I wasn't sure which way to say it, Kimmy.
We say it both ways. Coys R US, obviously, because we're four Americans that record a podcast and it makes sense. But it's similar to like Toys R Us and the logo and all that, too. So we kind of go both ways. It's just however you like to say it.
I really like that idea as a pod. There's a sort of a fairly famous old Toys R Us advert that they used to play every Christmas in the UK over here with an iconic theme tune. I'm not going to sing it to you now. And maybe I'll send you the link to it on YouTube afterwards or something like that. But it's where my head always goes to whenever I think of Toys R Us. So that's
and it. The same tune was probably played over here. I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. I'll sing it, but I'll say it. Yeah.
welcome to the show anyway. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Let's start on the pod, actually. How did that all come about? Who do you record with? Yeah.
So it's my best friend, one of my best friends from college, Joel. When I started following Spurs in 2018, 2019, he plopped me in a group chat with two other guys and himself. A guy that he met, I think, just Ben. I think he just met him randomly. I don't even remember where they met, but they sort of just connected. They were both Spurs fans and, you know, whatever. And then one of Jesse, other podcast host, he grew up with Joel. And so it's just four Spurs fans. I only knew one of them at the time. But so we sort of, for 4 years, talked Spurs together. And it was nice to have a group of guys who, you know, as I started to get into Spurs, give me some background. They have been following for a lot longer than me. So for me, it was just, you know, it's nice to talk to people about sports. I do that all over the place. And then getting into Spurs, the podcast sort of came out of us just thinking the stuff that we talk about in our group chat would be nice to talk about on the pod. So we sort of tossed the idea around in February of this year. We had a planning call in March, and then we recorded our first pod in April. And so I think we're up to 16 episodes so far. So we took a little bit of a break in the summer, recorded just a few pods. But and the beginning of the season has been kind of busy for us. I was over in the UK. Two other members moved. So we haven't recorded as frequently, but I think we're going to start getting back to our weekly. We usually record on Monday evenings, and then we'll usually put them out on Tuesday.
I was going to say, there's plenty of, if you've seen the fixture list in October, there's going to be
a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's going to be a fair amount of content. Catch up. So you've already answered my next question, which day we can catch it on. But you've sort of touched on there that you came into supporting Spurs in kind of 2018-19. I think it's awesome that you've jumped on a podcast like straight away, because I think as I'm sure you're finding out already, following Spurs, it's good to have that kind of that group therapy that you can you can kind of get into in the podcast form like that. How did you get into football? Because I do, you know, I'm not going to do the boring old Americans don't know anything about football stuff. I know it's growing over there now, right? But it's still not
definitely
mainstream, right?
No, it's not a mainstream, but so for me, I used to just be a World Cup watcher, so 2006, I, you know, any tournament that I could find I'd watch, but I didn't really know that much about who was playing. I just liked the, it was just fun to watch. And when you watch with a group, anything's fun. In 2018, in 2017, I decided to stop watching the NFL for my own particular reasons. But for me, it just wasn't something I was really interested in keeping to watch. So I sort of like freed up my ability to get into a new sport. World Cup 2018 was, to me, just an amazing tournament overall. It was fun to watch. And I was just like, it would be nice to do this regularly, to get into football regularly. So I sort of just said, okay, I'm going to pick a team. And there were a few other of my friends who did the same thing. We're just like, okay, there are probably like six of us. And we're like, we're going to pick a team. And so I just went through and looked at sort of top six. But I already said, well, I don't really like just being around in New York. I don't really like Chelsea fans. I don't really like Arsenal fans. And I don't really like Man U fans. That was a blanket statement. And and Man City just didn't feel right. I'm a Knicks fan. As a Knicks fan, having just going to choose like a front-running team also didn't feel good. And then, honestly, the England squad in 2018 was chock full of Spurs players, and they were a decently fun team at that time. They're a lot less fun now, but to me, it was like Spurs were still pretty young, exciting. They seemed to have built their team sort of like the right way, with, you know, players just getting better progressively as opposed to just buying in people. So as a person who just always liked development in teams, it just seemed like the perfect fit. And honestly, having a friend who also follows Spurs, I think, was helpful. So, you know, that's just how it happened. And then, obviously, 2018, 2019 was an amazing time to be a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
So, so it really, like, that season really just, like, captured me. And I would say even by, like, December, I was all Spurs, and you couldn't tell me anything.
Well, I'm glad that the... welcome aboard, basically. Welcome to the pain. But it is interesting, because I remember tweeting about this before, having like a conversation. I was just interested to know why Spurs in particular do have quite a large following in America, considering we've not really had much success or anything. And quite a few of the answers were like, well, that's all kind of part of it. Like, you know, you're a good team, but you're not great, and it's nice to feel like you're a part of a journey of something that is growing, as opposed to kind of, like you say, arriving there at the end already with Manchester City or, you know, even Chelsea or somebody like that. And it just makes total sense, really.
And I'll also say the people that I've met through following Spurs, I think it's also been very helpful to have kept me as a Spurs fan in the very beginning, like having those, you know, the three guys that I pod with.
Yeah.
Just to bounce stuff off, because I've always been someone who, I love sports, like basketball, I grew up playing it. And so once I sit and watch something, I'll sort of figure out, you know, stuff myself. But
yeah,
having people to talk to about it, and then, you know, supporters clubs here in the U.S. are big. And so going to see Spurs with Spurs fans, like that kind of stuff definitely worked to keep me around quickly.
Because there's a huge, especially because you're in New York, right? Am I correct
Yep.
in saying? Yeah, and there's a huge kind of Spurs fandom there, right, in New York.
Yeah, we have, we actually have three different supporters clubs in New York City. So we have Brooklyn Spurs, New York Spurs, which is in Manhattan. And then I go to Queens Spurs, in Queens, obviously. So yeah, there's a pretty big following. And like, we just started up Queen Spurs within the last year, and just to see how it's grown, since just it's been less than a year, actually, just to see how it's grown. And every time we go into the bar, there's a new person showing up, who follows Spurs, but may not have wanted to go into the city to watch them. So it's been really fun with that too.
That's cool. How many numbers and stuff do you get at? Cause I always see these photos of like huge kind of packed bars at like 8 a.m. and stuff like that, of people watching games. It's like, it's amazing to me, I think.
Yeah, I think, like I say, ours is a little smaller of a club. So I would say probably on our best day, we probably had 30 to 40. But like I say, people are finding out that we're there. So like I say, every time I go in, there's someone else I meet that's new. And our pub doesn't normally open for the super, super early games, but we've actually talked them into opening for the North London Derby, which is amazing. It should be a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, hopefully it'll be a lot of fun, you know, but this is, we'll talk about this one in a bit because it's going to be an interesting one, that one. Yeah, I just think that's really awesome. I mean, you have recently completed your pilgrimage over to White Hart Lane or the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, whichever way you want to call it. How did you find that? Was it the first time you've been over?
It was my first time. So I had plans to come over in 2020 for the North London Derby, but that was going to be happening in April of 2020. So obviously, COVID and all that stuff made sure that didn't happen. So yeah, this is the first time I was able to make it over since then. I think I actually picked a really good time to come because the team's back on the up. I think in 2020, you know, it was middle of Jose and yeah, that wasn't very fun. but yeah, I had a great time, honestly. I knew a couple of people through Twitter that I connected with, Shuban, just give him a shout out because he really, really helped me out when I went to the first game. I like didn't really know anybody. He introduced me to a few people. You know, I was able to talk to a few people, got to feel like, okay, I'm here. I'm a fan. Everybody was very welcoming. The game I went to, the first game was Fulham, which we obviously won, 2-1. And then I went to the Champions League match against Marseille, where we won as well. So it was nice to see some wins. Like, I know some fans who have come over from the U.S. a few times and they've not been to a win. So I felt kind of lucky in that way. Obviously, you can't choose the results and you don't even really choose the fixture. For me, it was just I had time off for U.S. We had Labor Day off. So I think it was like the 4th. That Monday, I had some vacation time, so I just used that time to get out there. So, yeah, I did the stadium tour. I did the skywalk. Went to a few pubs. Number 8. Where else did I go? Blue Coats. Blue Coats as well. Antwerp Arms. And I went to the brewery that you guys have there in Tottenham. I can't remember. Redemption
Brewery. Yeah.
So I went to a couple places, did some stuff in the stadium too. So yeah, I had a really, really good time.
It's funny. It's pretty awe inspiring, the stadium, I find, because I do have a tendency, and I know I can be sort of a bit of a sort of a grump about it sometimes, because I kind of, you know, a lot of my formative memories were in the old ground before it kind of got destroyed. And I obviously know objectively this stadium's miles better. And I did during lockdown, when we were first allowed to kind of start doing certain little trips outside of the house, I actually ended up doing the stadium tour and the skywalk and everything like that. And it's pretty awesome, isn't it? Like I always tell my friends who are, you know, who live overseas and stuff, when they come into the UK, even if they're not Spurs fans and they're asking me for things to do in London, I will say, just, I'm not just saying it 'cause I'm a Spurs fan, but honestly, if you know, you like sports, just go and do the Tottenham kind of skywalk and stuff like that, because it's unbelievable. I thought it was anyway.
I thought it was really nice. And like the stadium tour, just to be able to get in there and like see, you know, where the players walk around, and honestly, just being in the stadium, after seeing it on TV for the last like 3 years, you just want to be there. And I sat in the south stand both times, so atmosphere wise felt like it was great. I definitely recommend anyone who hasn't been to the stadium yet to get there. It's huge, obviously, which makes it a little easier to get tickets, I'd say, because I know in the past it was much harder for people to come over from the U.S. or internationally in general to see Spurs. But, you know, right now it's not too difficult, and it's a lot of fun.
Which I'm interested to know, kind of so far on your sort of supporting journey, which players have really have you taken to? Are there any kind of outside of the Kane and Son? Are there any players that you're like, I really like this guy and I don't know why, but I just kind of, there was something about them that you were drawn to at all?
So in the past, it was Toby. I really, really just love Toby. Yeah. Richarlison is the new guy for me, though. Like, I just love him. Like, everything
about
him.
He's amazing, isn't he?
I'm literally in love with him. I just think what he brings to the team in terms of energy, you can just, like, tell whenever he's on the pitch, they're just going to, like, everybody just picks it up just a little bit. We find ourselves, if he's leading the line, we'll find ourselves up the pitch just 10 more feet. I don't know. It's just something about him that I think is infectious in the team. And so I hope we, continue to see more of him and he finally gets a goal in the league. But
and you got,
I was happy to see him score. I got an awesome video. It was the second goal, the one that Højbjerg put in. I was just recording, we were chanting because it was right after the first. He scored those two goals in quick succession.
Yeah.
So I was just recording, chanting. I think it was just, when the Spurs go marching in. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's very loud. Let me get some of this. And I saw we got a corner. So I was like, I'm just going to keep recording to see if anything happens. And then, I was able to get the goal. And
I'm so glad you got a Champions League game in there because it's.
Yeah.
I'm sure you are as well, but it's just as the Premier League's great. It's awesome. The league football and everything, like what people say, like the bread and butter, if you like. But there's something about just Champions League football, European football in general is pretty special. But at Spurs as well, there's just such a connection, right, with kind of European competition. Playing midweek under the floodlights when they kind of wear the kind of the special all white kit with the shorts and stuff like that. It's, I don't know. Did you sort of notice
there's
a difference in atmosphere?
There's a different energy.
Yeah
it definitely is a different energy. And I'm also glad I got to experience it. I don't think I've ever been to a game the only game that I've been to that I think can rival that was, well, I went to go see the Knicks play the first game that they were back in the playoffs after, like, I think it had been over 8 years. So that to me and the Champions League are like the two best atmospheres I've experienced at a match or a game.
It's just the one, is it? If anybody is, anybody listening, if you want to have a game to go to, just go to a European game. It doesn't matter if it's just like the group stages or whatever, like just, it's always a good night. Like it's, unless we lose, I guess. But even then, you can kind of try and find some joy from it.
You can still have some fun. The only thing is it's harder to plan for a European game. Like,
that's true.
You kind of know when you'll know when the games are going to happen. But I was lucky that we got a home draw while I was there. Like, I had planned my trip that I was like, okay, if we have a match, if we end up, drawing a home match, I made sure to leave on the 8th. Because the 6th and the 7th were match days, but it was very possible that game ended up being in Marseille. Didn't know.
Well, yeah, speaking about filming kind of moments in European games, I had I've still got it somewhere. I'll try and dig it out. There's a video of, I think it was it might be like the 2017 season when we were at Wembley Stadium and we were playing Juventus. And it was a game when we'd drawn out in Juventus and then we were winning at Wembley. we were all over them for this part and the whole stadium. Suddenly, because Wembley had been so, like, it was overall, it was an awful experience playing there. It wasn't home. The stadium's too big. It's kind of massive for most of the league games and things like that. It's like a 100,000 seater near enough stadium. It's very far from the pitch and everything like that. And just the whole routine, everything around it just was off. But it still kind of was decent because the European games are kind of showpiece fixtures. And that's really what a stadium like Wembley Stadium is made for big kind of showpiece games. And yeah. I had this video because I can't remember if we were winning 2. I think they'd gone 1-0 up, but we came back and were winning 2-1. And it was just like a real sort of flurry of excitement. And the whole stadium, for like one of the first times I'd seen it there, was just like erupting and everyone almost unanimously just singing, "Oh, when the Spurs," just kind of full voice. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. And I was filming it. And just as I'm filming it, you just see Juventus running up the pitch and scoring and the whole ground just going silent, you know, other than this little pocket of Italian fans in the corner just going crazy. You know, and I just remember being like, oh, this is such like, there's such a gallows humour to this. And I sent it to one of my friends who is actually a Juventus fan, and he was obviously loving it and everything. But it's football, isn't it? It's where you got to take it.
That was the lads, it's Tottenham match, wasn't
it?
I wasn't a fan, but that's something that you learn certain things about the team. And that was one of the first things that someone sent me when they found out I was a Spurs fan. And I was like, it's kind of shitty of you, but okay.
Yeah, it was Chiellini, wasn't it? He just said, we know the history of the club. And you're like, cheers, man. Thanks. Yeah, I'm glad you know that. Yeah.
It's messed up.
Well, let's set our sights on kind of the here and now. It's funny because objectively, it should be a great season for Spurs. We're unbeaten in the league. We're just kind of a few places off the top of the league. I think we're sitting third, but we're joint second technically with Manchester City. But if you look at the conversation online and everything, it feels like it's not been great. I mean, where are you at with it right now?
I think we can play a lot better, but I'm pretty happy with the team overall because we're still getting results. And when you look at things like the XG, it's not like we're being beaten by anybody. We're not giving up loads of chances in places that will hurt us. And I think that's by design, that Conte has the team drilled to not let people, a lot of times when you think, oh, that person has an open shot, the shots get blocked or somebody puts their body in the way. And so I just think in terms of possession, we at times just can't knit passes together. And that's kind of frustrating because we know the team overall has the ability to play better. We've seen it. And I don't think this is they figured Conte out. I think Conte needs to adjust a bit. Because maybe they are figuring out some of the automations that he's putting into place. But I think overall, he's a good manager, and he'll figure out a way to get the team to play better over the course of the season. And who knows, he might have just said, guys, we got a lot of games to play. We're not going to kill ourselves so that at the end of the season we can't sustain this. So it's sort of a still wait and see. Because we still have guys that can come in and help the team. Like, we haven't seen much of Bissouma yet. I think after the international break, we'll see some more of Doherty. We also haven't seen much of Skip either. So I feel like there's moves that we can make and there's things that we can do. There are people that we can bring in that even last year we didn't have. I just think our team's deeper and it gives us the opportunity to play differently. And, you know, after what we saw against Leicester, it'll be interesting to see if we play a little bit more of that 3-5-2.
Yeah, big time. It is interesting what you say, because I have landed on the place now where I do feel like it is very intentional, the amount of possession we surrender to the opposition, because like you say, it doesn't always make for the kind of like the most pleasant viewer experience, right? Kind of sat there seeing Tottenham not really kind of in control, if you like, in the conventional sense of a game. But when you do, like you're saying, when you do sort of step back and take a look at everything afterwards, even like the Chelsea game, where it's a horrible place for Tottenham to go, you know, to Stamford Bridge away, but they didn't really create that many good opportunities or anything at all. And they did. They did punish us on the... I think they had that one glaring miss, didn't they, from Kai Havertz. But other than that, they didn't really do that much against us. And I don't think there's been many games, if any at all, this season where... I think like the Lisbon game, for example, was just a bad day at the office. you know, we didn't take our chances and it caught up with us. But I don't think we played particularly poorly.
No, we didn't. It wasn't great, but when you look at the balance of play, things were pretty even. They just scored two goals in the, after the 90th minute.
Yeah. And it was the second goal was great as well. Like, it was a really great individual goal, you know. Sometimes that just happens, right? That's kind of why we watch the sport, because you do have these moments. Like, Son just did that against Leicester, you know. He came off the bench and got a hat-trick. Like,
that was wild.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, it's just absolute. But it shouldn't be. I say it's unbelievable, but it shouldn't be, right? Like, it's Son. We should know that he's got there. But we'll talk about him a bit more in a while. I'm interested to know, like, how do you feel about Conte? Like, we all know he's a great manager, but are you like, you know, do you love him? Do you like, are you here for him? Or are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty here for him. Of the managers we've had since I've been a fan, Pochettino, Jose, a little bit of Ryan Mason and Conte, I think I really, really like Pochettino, but you could tell that he sort of lost the team.
Yeah.
And he needed better players to be brought in. He wanted to sell some people. He wanted to buy some people, and that kind of stuff just didn't happen. So I think we kind of let him down as a club, and then the players sort of started to sort of tune him out, and that was just a recipe for disaster when it was all said and done. But I think Conte is the best manager we've had out of all of them, I would say. He might not have been the manager that would have done what Pochettino did, got those players from no one really know who they are to being Premier League, like, top level players. But he's the kind of guy that if you give him a team that's semi-formed already, that they have an idea about how they want to play, he'll come in and just galvanize them. And I think that's what he did with our guys. Is they all love him. If throughout this international break, the only thing you've heard from everybody is how much they love Conte. And so if that's the kind of stuff we're getting from the team, if the team loves him, if they're with him, then I'm with him. But he can be very mercurial. There are times where I'm just like, Conte, you don't have to say that. And I know he does that sometimes to try and get guys to respond. And that's why he's the manager and I'm not. But some of the stuff that he said about Spence,
I found some of it
to be a little unnecessary. But on the whole, I think he's kind of what we needed when we needed it. Am I talking about manager? I just totally forgot about Nuno, which is very interesting.
I think we all do, though. It's kind of, I feel bad for, the thing is, I feel bad for, I never really had any animosity for Nuno. I mean, I definitely had animosity for Nuno in that North London derby away, when he just decided to not play a midfield at all. But other than that, I just felt like it was just a massive job for him. He'd just come off the back of, like, it would have been like somebody giving Pochettino a job just after the whole Spurs thing kind of coming to an end. Like, you know, maybe he needed a bit more time out of the game and a thing like that, because I understand that Wolves, it was maybe like a smaller version of what happened at Spurs, but they still had like an epic European run. They had a great team unit where they all kind of played for each other. He was idolized by the fan base there, and it just kind of felt like he almost made this step up into a fairly more kind of, it sounds awful to say of Spurs, but like a more kind of corporate environment in a way, kind of being at the top end of the league and playing in this massive stadium with kind of fans with like huge expectations now, really, as set by somebody like Pochettino, really. So it just felt like it was a little too soon for him.
I think we're not a club that goes after a certain caliber of manager. I think so. It's like hard for me to think about who comes next after Conte, if that ever changes, because
it's really hard, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, you start going through the names and you're really like, who is next? And it might just be that we hire a young manager with some great ideas, and he's done some stuff somewhere, but we might We might have to give someone a chance again.
I was going to say, annoyingly, he's just gone to Chelsea. That guy.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the guy who I would have liked, you know, after Conte. If I did have a choice, that was the one, just because, one, he plays kind of similarly to Conte with system. He's good. He's okay playing a back three, and I think the defenders we have, we probably want a manager that sticks with that. I think the back three just works for us as a squad, and we're buying players for a back three, and we're buying players for wing backs. We're not, you know, what we're looking to do is get wing backs in. You can see when we signed Destiny Udogie, he's a wing back's wing back. So I think we're probably going to end up sticking with a similar formation even in our next manager. So that also, I think, narrows the pool a little bit as well. But yeah, I guess we'll just have to see how things end up with Conte. But speaking to those Juventus links, I just think we're in a better position than Juventus is overall. And that would be the romantic place for him to go, but I don't think it's the best place for... Like, I think the best place for him to be is just to stay at Spurs. As long as Harry Kane is here, I think he should stay.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, I sort of think of him going back to Juventus, it would be the same as kind of Pochettino coming back to Tottenham, right? There's plenty of time for that. Like, if Conte does want to have the kind of the homecoming, I understand. The thing that worried me about it a little bit is that it seemed to be through the sort of the various kind of discussion, will he, won't he go to Juventus, that although he had problems with the board at some point, which apparently it all culminated actually, and when he went back there as Inter manager, he ended up like shouting and swearing at the director's box because they were shouting and swearing at him. He had like a full on, like, or I think he like gave him the middle finger or something like that because there were people like hurling abuse at him from the director's box. And I think it all came to a bit of a head, but it people in the game seem to understand that he's got a better relationship with Juventus now, and there is some appetite to maybe go back there one day. But right now, I mean, surely, I mean, if my fear more is that he ends up going somewhere like Real Madrid. You know, that's the kind of...
Yeah.
Surely he wants that kind of...
Job.
Yeah, job before he goes back to Juventus. Because he's young as managers go, really. You know, he's got plenty of time to go back there and kind of sort them out again, you know. And they're in loads of debt as well, I think, at the moment as well, even. So I don't think it's like a pretty picture.
Yeah, I think into. The best place for a guy like Conte, a guy who actually wants to buy people, wants to get, like, especially our team, like, you can tell in January we'll probably buy at least one player in January, and next summer we'll probably buy a few more. The money is in the Premier League, so I for right now I think Spurs is the best place for him, and I think he sees that. I think what buying Richarlison showed a statement of intent from Daniel Levy, just to say, we're actually going to spend a little money on players who, I mean, 5 years ago, we wouldn't have bought a Richarlison.
No.
Just wouldn't have happened. He would have went to Chelsea or City.
100%. Yeah, exactly. But it's a commitment, isn't it, to bringing up the calibre of the squad, not just kind of either trying to buy first, like, players who are ready to step straight into the first team as a replacement, mm-hmm. or buying kind of young players. Like, yeah, Spence is an example of the kind of speculative spending that Spurs generally do and have done pretty well, to be fair, historically speaking. But it is interesting what you pick up on Spence, because that's I would say, I really was not on board with Conte last year. I found it really hard with, when we were kind of going through those losing streaks, and he had that particularly kind of, I thought, petulant press conference after we lost to Burnley. And people kind of brush us off with these kind of, I don't know, almost like, I don't want to go too kind of deep on it, but these kind of like stereotypical thing assertions of, oh, he's Italian, it's what they're like. I'm like, kind of like, well, he's a professional guy at the end of the day. He doesn't need to be kind of saying he's going to quit and walk out after a loss to Burnley. You know, I wasn't really on board with that. But I feel like you said, because I agree with you, I think he actually, he has suddenly like looked around and thought, you know what, this, there's real potential here to do something really good with this team, and I can be the guy, the one that finally cracks it at Tottenham.
That's what he did at Inter. Yeah. He was the one that finally cracked it. That championship had been with Juventus for what, 8 years running?
I think something like crazy like that.
He was the guy that came in and said, "Okay, I think I can do something here," and he did it. Which I was very surprised he went for Spurs, but I think Man United was very idiotic. I don't think he would have enjoyed being in there for too long, honestly. So I think he probably made the right choice to come to Spurs over them. But I just think we were at a crossroads where we were floundering, sort of just trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, Paratici, it seems like he has an idea. He had an idea about what he wanted to do. And he wanted to hire, you know, we wanted to hire Conte in the summer. He just didn't think we were the team for him. And I think that might have worked in his favor. The fact that he did say no and they came back, they had to come with a bit of an assurance to say, you know, we are going to take this seriously. And then in January, you see we buy two players that immediately fit into our first 11. And then in the summer, we again buy a player who immediately fits into our first 11 in Perisic, but we still do the thing that we expect. And that, you know, all good teams do. All good teams buy in different levels. They'll buy a guy who can fit in, they'll buy depth, and then they'll buy speculative buys. We should be doing all three of those things consistently, just to keep the squad fresh, keep the squad, you know, we do want to keep it semi-young. And I think like Richarlison's is a good example of that. What is he, 25? So he's still pretty young, but is Premier League proven. And I think that was just it's a good buy. Really, really good buy.
Yeah, I just think for everything, isn't it? He ticks all the boxes for me, Richarlison. It's definitely true because we had that awful summer, that managerial kind of race, not even race, carousel of going through all these. Do you know what I mean? Like if it was a race, nobody was winning. Yeah. Basically, it was just this horrible carousel of being linked with like this sort of litany of. It was like a rogues gallery, you know, like
it was everybody. And then like we were interested in Potter and he did turn us down last summer. So it was like we were in sort of a negative perception, a place of a negative perception, the team, the squad, you know, I just felt like overall there was just a negative cloud over Spurs. And, you know, Nuno got hired and it was like, okay, there's something new. Then he, you know, went and beat City. And so you're like, oh, maybe this might be okay. And then it immediately turned to shit.
It's like, maybe he will make us proud. Maybe this is going to happen. Oh, no. hello, darkness, my old friends. You know, like, I don't really want to entertain kind of the idea of him leaving, but it's always going to be the question with a manager like Conte, because that's just I don't think that's us looking into things too much. It's just what Conte's like. We've seen that throughout his career. Do you think personally that if we say finish in the top four, Genesis, we get Champions League football, we maybe make a couple more signings in January. There's assurances there that he will get money in summer, but we don't win anything this year. Do you think that'll be enough for him to stay on for that extra year that I think he still will have, or the option to extend at the end of his career?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Contracts.
I actually do, because I think he knows that Spurs weren't in a place to challenge for championship. Like, we weren't in a place to challenge for titles when he took the job. And this summer was a step in the right direction. I think he's even said that a couple times, is we're not yet on the city level. So I think he wants to win. He's going to try his hardest to have us win something. But I think if we don't, it's not going to be the nail in the coffin that says I have to leave. I actually think he's enjoying building up these players, getting them to a higher level, getting them to perform. I mean, just the way we look at it, the results, like you say, we've gotten the results. Maybe the performance hasn't been where I even think he wants it to be. Our inability to hold on to the ball, is something that I know he wants to fix. And hopefully, you know, as time goes along, that's the kind of stuff that we do fix and gets. And to me, that thing right there, being able to just hold possession a little bit more, like 10%, will be enough to get us up the pitch better. And going back to that 3-5-2, I think that's the way to do it, because it puts more guys in the midfield, and that's where we tend to lose the ball.
It's annoying because it looked really nice, didn't it, in that sort of the closing stages of that Leicester game. If anything, it arguably enabled Son to score his hat trick.
Yeah, it was nice. I think it gave him the platform to do it.
Right. And it was nice to see Bissouma as well, actually looking kind of confident and comfortable, being able to kind of do his stuff, knowing that he had the Bentancur and Højbjerg alongside him. Do you think that, because I mean, unfortunately though, with all that said, I just have that feeling that Conte's just going to stick to his guns and he's not going to go, because I think we're crying out for that formation against Arsenal, right? A team that loves to dominate the midfield, loves to dominate possession. If we can get in and sort of disrupt their own patterns of play, because my fear with Arsenal is that they're a team that they can create chances. And in Jesus, they, as much as I like to kind of start the kind of culture war between him and Richarlison, they do have a good player in Jesus, and obviously a very good player that can score goals. And my big fear is that if we allow them to kind of dominate possession in the way that we allow teams to and Arsenal like to do, that if we don't hit them on the break, because, you know, on the other side, teams playing that way, it's usually as putty in Conte's hands. But if we don't manage to get them on the break, if our strikers are having another off day and they get a goal, they get an early goal, maybe get two before half time, they can just kind of shut up. And we sometimes don't always have that kind of creative spark there that we need to break through teams that aren't coming out to play against us anymore. So it is a game I would like us to approach on the front foot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I would too. It will be interesting to see what Conte does. But I think Arsenal is the kind of team that is, they'll leave spaces because they want to push up. We saw that when they played Man U. That was a game that I had, that's why I think I had like a great week. You know, we won on Saturday, they lost to Man U on Sunday, and then we won again on Wednesday. And so I was watching that match in a bar, and as the match was going on, like you say, Man U, I think they might have been tied 1-1. And then I think Man U scored a quick goal after halftime, and it was just Arsenal. So if we manage to get a couple, I think we'll be in a good position, because they will just push up. They'll leave the spaces. They're very naive still in that way where they'll let you get in behind them. And they're playing Ben White as a right. He's playing, I guess it's a back three they're playing now.
Yeah.
Or they're playing a back four and he's playing right back. And so I think if we can get some speed in behind them, we'll probably be able to score. I can see Kane doing what he did against City, just knocking balls over the top for people to run onto. You know? I can see that happening for sure. And Arsenal's I just don't think they're defensively strong enough to prevent that from happening.
It's funny, it's interesting, isn't it? Because they're playing with such confidence at the moment, and it's not all like they're playing very well. It's horrible to say, but they really are. But we kind of saw there's still that. I still think there's that little bit in them, maybe because they're a young team, maybe it's because Arteta is, at least what I got from All or Nothing and everything like that, is that he's very, it's very emotional. The whole Arsenal project, it's very emotional. And when it doesn't go their way, it hits them, right? That Manchester United game, they were great at Old Trafford. Arsenal were great, but they almost felt like affronted that Manchester United would score against them and would be trying to beat them, you know?
It reminds me of Pochettino Spurs, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
it looks very similar, where if they manage to play their game, then most likely they're going to win. But if you make it hard for them, if you make it difficult, if you put bodies in the way, they'll get frustrated. And they'll push another player up and they'll leave the space. And to me, that's honestly probably how we play them. I think that's exactly what Conte is going to see. And he's just going to see the space that they'll create on their own just from being frustrated. We just, you know, it's one of those things that, and my thing is that even if they score a goal, I think he sticks with it probably for a little while. Because he probably thinks we have enough to score, and as hopefully Sonny is over his goal drought, hopefully that hat trick is what did it. He did score a nice free kick.
Oh, it's beautiful, wasn't it?
As well, yeah. That I think after seeing that free kick, I was like, okay, I think Sonny has gotten his mojo back. Where, what it is we might be seeing just. Sonny's going to be taking a bunch of shots off on the edge of the box. If he gets the space, you might see him. Because a lot of times, I think even earlier in the season, he wasn't taking those shots. He was dribbling in, trying to get closer to the goal. And two of his goals that he scored for us, obviously, were very much on the edge of the box. Just took the space that was given to him and sort of put it in the top corner. So I think he probably should look to do that a little more. Because he seems to find himself in those spaces, just be ready for it.
I think one of the other things after seeing that free kick is like, can somebody please just sit Harry Kane down, tell him that we really appreciate him, we love everything that he does for the club, other than please just stop taking the free kicks, please give them to Sonny, please. Because
give them to Sonny or Eric Dier.
Oh yeah,
those are my two. Even Perisic, I think, would be good on free kicks. Kane just needs to get into the box so he can be the one to poach on the ones that don't make it in. Like, I think that's what we need to sort of bed into his head, is just he's always someone that will find that space, and I think that's one of his best qualities is. He'll find a way to get space where there should not be any space, and rebound, stuff like that. Maybe that's what Vio needs to dial into his head, that like, you're really, really good at this thing. We're going to, you know, we're going to take these free kicks, but be there to clean it up. Like, you might be able to get a few more goals just by doing that. You're not going to score them on the free kick. I think it's like, it's been proven at this point that he is not the guy for free kicks.
Yeah, I think more than, right? It's just, it's part of like what makes him who he is, in person, what makes any kind of elite athlete, sports person, where the way they are in terms of like, I can do everything and I will do everything. And I'm, you know, I've done enough for this club now that I'm going to have a tantrum and I'm taking the free kicks, you know, but dude, come on, man. It's just, It's a good point.
Sonny, I think, just improved on his dead ball, just everything. Corners, free kicks. I just think he, that's one thing that after Eriksen left, we were just like, who's going to be doing this stuff? We just relied on Eriksen to do everything for a very long time, and it was interesting to see that. I think it took like a year for Sonny to get comfortable taking corners, and that kind of thing. But now you can see, like, he gets a few of his assists on corners now. Like, it's pretty consistent. I think he probably got 3 or 4 assists off corners last year. So that's where I see his development and his growth over like the last 2 or 3 years. And it's probably why, when it's all said and done, he's probably my favorite guy on the team, because he dedicated himself to us at a time where he really didn't have to.
Yeah.
Like, when he signed that extension, it wasn't like I didn't even expect him to sign it at that time. And it wasn't at a time where we were performing all that well. He was just like, he loves Spurs. He just wants to be here. And you can tell he does love us, because he just, every year just gets a little better, gets a little better. And yeah, he went through a bit of a rough patch, like any player does. Like, every player has a drop in form at times. I probably would have sat him a little earlier than Conte did, but I can't really argue with what Conte did, because the moment he sat him down, he scored 3 goals.
it's crazy, isn't it? Because I hit that point where I was like, you know what, like, I love Sonny, I love everything he's done, but at the end of the day, it's a results business, and he's not produced. And as soon as, like, you know, you have that moment of being like, right, he's gone from the team, he comes in, does his hat trick, and he's sort of saying at the end, he's dedicating the goals to the fans, saying how upset he was that he'd let everybody down and stuff. I'm just like, I'm a horrible person. I don't deserve him at all, you know?
But the thing is I think, but when we sign a player like Richarlison, when guys are struggling, it's not a knock on Sonny. I think a lot of people, it's like you either think you have to criticize him or love him, and there's no in between. Like, that there needs to be some nuance here. Sonny needed to sit. Yes, that needed to happen. I probably would have done it against Fulham. That the game that I went to, I was like, yeah, we should probably start Richarlison today. that was me. But Conte was like, no, I want to stick with my guy. He's always been here for me, so I'm gonna be here for him in this moment. But the moment I think what it was is the moment we lost, he said, okay, I'm gonna change it. And for him, he could say to Sonny, you know, we lost on Wednesday. I'm going to try something different today. And Sonny probably just had to take that and say, you know, to a man, yeah, we did lose, and I was a part of that. It wasn't just me, but my performances haven't been up to par. And he only sat him for 55 minutes. I think he came in around minute 55. So you can tell he trusts Sonny still. It was never any loss of trust. You could tell Sonny wanted to play, of course, but he didn't start. The moment he got on the pitch, you could tell he just had a higher level of energy. And I think it was helpful we played Leicester, because they're just terrible. They're a terrible team.
Awful, aren't they? That's so bad. I was really actually annoyed that they scored 2 against us, you know? What's that about? I think it's just as well, they're kind of Kane less so, but, well, maybe not in the coming months, but Sonny especially, I think it's the first time in their Spurs careers, at least, that they've actually got legitimate competition now as well. So I guess there may be other stuff there at play, kind of just juggling with the psychology of that feeling, that pressure of somebody like Richarlison there to take your place in the team if you're not playing well, and you can get into your own head in a way. But you know, the thing is, the reason why I'm obviously happy that Sonny's firing again, and from what we were talking about at the top end of the pod as well, as to whether or not Spurs are playing well, I think a lot of it has been down to the form of Son and Kane as well. I think Spurs have been playing quite well, and just in crucial moments, really, our two generally reliable, historically record-holding front pairing are just have kind of not. I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say Kane scored 6 in 7, I think, this year so far. But the two of them, like, it's felt a little disjointed, and hopefully now we can start to see them kind of going up through the gears, and in turn that will probably push Spurs on. Because I think the thing that is, to me, that is so exciting about where Tottenham are now, and what I'm trying to hold on to, is that we're where we are now with, you know, with this kind of idea that we are playing questionably at times, but we're still there, we're still unbeaten, we're still level with Manchester City, probably the best team in Europe. If things start to click for us, if everything starts to go our way, then our level can, you know, can go on even more than this. I'd rather be where we are now, for example, than where Arsenal are now, seemingly kind of playing at the sort of the limit of their capabilities right now, because that isn't sustainable for a whole season, right? Like, at least I can't see that being that way.
As I was saying, our team just kind of reminds me of Conte's Chelsea. Very, very similar to how they did it, where it wasn't always pretty, but they won most of their matches, and at times they would destroy you. So I just think we just have to keep working. And the one thing that I know these guys are going to do, and I know Conte is going to do, is keep working. It's just going to be a continual, let's try and get better. And I think we have a squad of players that buy into that idea of let's try and get better. Let's try and do this a little better than we did it the last game. And if we, like I say, if Sonny gets back to the Sonny of last year, where he's scoring every other game, along with what Kane is doing, I think Richarlison will probably start getting some goals in the league. I hope we start scoring more goals, because I have a bet that Kulusevski is going to win Playmaker of the Year. So hoping that he can get some more assists.
I mean, he's just unbelievable. I cannot believe how good he already feels like an elite level footballer, as opposed to like a promising youngster. He just feels like an elite footballer already, man. Like, he
has all the tools, like everything that you need to, and you look at him, and when he's running, you're just like, he doesn't look that fast, but he's very strong. It's hard to get the ball off him when he has it. He's tricky. And then he just, his right foot, you know, the way he, what is it? Does he cross with his right mostly? Yeah.
He shoots with his left.
He
does
like
the Arjen Robben thing. Yeah, no, I think he does. He's got that like really interesting kind of like technique when he crosses a ball. He almost like jumps into the ball. Do you know what I mean? It like whips it. Just the way he just whips those balls in, it's just, I love
it's
him.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It really is. You know, like it's art. Let's just, you know, have that framed like a gif that can loop or something in an art. I'm sure they can do that now in galleries, right?
It's great to have him on the right and then Perisic on the left, because you get a mix of you know, balls coming in from both sides.
And to your point earlier, it's like, this is why it's like, Kane, just stay in the box, please. Like, just stay up there and get on the end of like this. This is what you've wanted your whole Tottenham career. Because it is the international break. We'll just end on this one. Just a little talking point. The Argentine national team have apparently asked all of their kind of squads, respective clubs, that their players will be allowed to leave early, so they're essentially safeguarded for the World Cup. That obviously hasn't gone down very well with many people. Where do you kind of stand on that? Because I mean, like, I'm sort of torn on these kind of issues, because I, like, personally speaking, I do understand that, like, international football, a player representing their country, it is very important to them. But equally, I do think, like, a lot of these players, they need to realise that they do have a responsibility to their club and to the fans that pay a lot of money and enable them to have these amazing wages, and exactly, and to see them and everything like that. Romero obviously is our player in question here, who is arguably one of our best players, and I'm kind of having that sort of juggling my head as to whether or not do we want to kind of jeopardize a long-term relationship with this player over, let's say, one match or something like that ahead of the World Cup. Maybe we do need to look at the bigger picture, but still, in principle, it kind of, it feels a bit wrong to me.
But my thing is, don't you think the other teams would want to do that same thing? If to me, what makes Argentina that special that they're the only country that's been like, we don't want our players playing, can we send them early? What makes you guys more special than Brazil, honestly?
I think they're hoping everyone will get a bit drunk on the "this is Messi's last chance to win a World Cup" narrative, you know? It's like, guys, not everybody else cares.
Right. So to me, it's just a... It was a very interesting ask, and Argentina, and they did something very similar, before the Copa America, where guys weren't supposed to go, and they just always seem to have something. Argentina just seems to be the country that's always making problems for clubs.
They just, they took, didn't they? They took, like, Lo Celso, Romero, and I can't remember, I think it was Lanzini or someone from West Ham. They just got them on a private jet and flew them out of the country. Yep. It's like... Because they're not supposed to be like, I think it was actually like illegal or something tenuously when they were doing it.
What it was is, I think the countries that they were playing in was on like the UK's red list.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
So the guys would have to quarantine for like a week or two after they got back. So basically, you're going to play these matches, we're not going to have you, and then when you come back, you can't play because you have to be in quarantine. So yeah. I like them as a team, but I'm starting not to like the way they go about things.
It's kind of annoying, isn't it? Like, I'm half Argentinian as well. Like, and I still find myself getting annoyed with them. Like, I don't know. It is like, please. Like, I think, but you've nailed it there. I hadn't even thought of it that way in terms of like, what if every national team was just like, no, we want our players. That's it. Like, actually, from this point, they're playing, you know, the World Cup's in a couple of months now, so we're just going to put them in an intensive kind of training camp. Hope you don't mind, you know? Oh, dear. Yeah. But it's
this
been
whole a... whole Winter World Cup will be interesting, for sure.
Oh, yeah, it is indeed. It will indeed. And it's going to be interesting to see the States against England again. They always seem to get pitted together in a World Cup setting.
During Thanksgiving, which is very funny. The World Cup, it's happening during our Thanksgiving is obviously a big national US holiday.
Yeah, and that's like football season as well, or American football, isn't it?
It is, and so it falls right in that week. It starts that week, so I've decided I'm just going to take the whole week off.
Yeah. So it's a good, that's what everybody's always saying as well. If we do manage to win the league at some point, I'm just having a month off. I'm just telling work I'm not coming in for a while, you know.
Yeah.
But we've got all that to look forward to. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, Kimmy. Thanks for giving me your time. Thank you so much for
having me. I've really, really appreciated it, Jack. I've had a really good time too.
Thank you. And let's give the pod one last plug. What's the name? Where can everybody find it? When can they listen to it?
All right. So the pod is the Coys Are US podcast. We are mostly on Twitter. If you want to follow us, it's Coys Are US podcast. And we usually record on Monday, so they usually drop on Tuesdays. Like I said, we had a bit of our members were doing a lot over the last couple months. So we're hoping to get back to once a week. If not, we'll probably do it every 2 weeks. But I have a feeling with all the matches throughout the month of October, we'll get back to our weekly schedule. So you can usually find them on Tuesday mornings. If we have something that comes up on Mondays, then they'll be there on Wednesday. And just check us out if you get a chance. We have 3 other members on the podcast, so it's usually a good time. Thanks a lot, Jack.
And I'll put Kimmy's handle in the tweet and everything like that. So give her a follow, get involved, listen to the pods, and thanks again, Kimmy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.